Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the second central coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Bruce Brander. And Bruce has worked for National Geographic. He's been a writer. He's been a correspondent. He's traveled throughout the world to war zones. And he's had a fascinating life. But he's decided to change his occupation to some extent. And so now he's writing books. And he wrote a wonderful book a couple of years ago called Staring into Chaos. And we actually carried the book until it went out of print. But it was a book simply reviewing the history of the great philosophers of the past and talking about how great societies have been destroyed in the past. And of course, as you look and see what's happening in America today, it's like deja vu all over again. And you have to understand the past to understand what's going on anyway. That was really one of my favorite books, tremendous insight. And now Bruce has written another book, and it's an entirely different sort of book. It's a small book with 161 pages. It's called Love That Works, The Art and Science of Giving. And I think that you'll find this book will be something you'd like to read, you'd like to give to your wife, to your spouse, you'd like to give to your children. And I think that every young person who, of course, is beginning to date and getting caught up in romance, or college students, perhaps they've had romances already and they've ended tragically, I think they need to read this book, because it will give them tremendous insight into the history of love down through the centuries. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, it's my great pleasure, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure.
Well, what is to tell our listeners a little bit about how you happened to write a book on love? After all, you've toured the world, you've been in the countries, you've been in the war zones, you've seen the violence, you've seen all of these terrible things that have gone on in the world, worked for National Geographic, and now you're living in Colorado writing a book on love?
Yes, it does seem rather odd, having led the life of rather of an adventurer, really. And I've got a boy's taste for adventure, and I turned it in the right direction by working for first Geographic and then for World Vision Relief Agency, where I went off to the emergencies of the world and tried to report them, to show people what was going on, and to attract help for the people who needed it. And the book on love actually arose a long time ago when I was in university. I was about 22 years old. I had worked in the merchant marine as a sailor to see the world, and I had been in the army for a couple of years as a draftee, also seeing the world. And I came back home to Milwaukee. That was my home place. And my intention was to settle down to marry. I was 22 years old. And I remember hearing the pop songs about romancing, and they just did not sound right. They sounded mournful, dolorous, over-ecstatic in some cases, and they didn't sound true. And I was old enough to have my head screwed on right, but I went against my own better judgment and got into the society's version of romance and lived to regret it, had an engagement and backed out of it. And then I began to see that many, many people are having the same trouble, broken romances, broken hearts, broken families, broken children. And out of sheer compassion, I began to research the topic of love to see if there isn't more to it than simply romance. And we practice it.
And of course, this book is very, very profound, because it goes back into what was known thousands of years ago about love and romance, and even the origin of the word romance. Where does it come from? Well, you're going to learn that and so much more in Love That Works. We'll be back in just a moment here with Bruce Brander. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Bruce Brander, and Bruce has written a wonderful book called Love That Works. And for our listeners, why, Bruce has been our guest in the past with another very, very profound and philosophic book he's written called Staring at the Chaos. And those of you who were lucky enough to get a copy when we offered it, well, you're very lucky. It's a book that's well worthwhile having. It's out of print now. We're hoping, and Bruce, I hope that if the publisher does reprint it again, that you'll let us know, and we'll certainly be glad to carry it and interview you again. Because I think it's so important that our listeners understand the history of what happened in the past. For as George Santayana said, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it, not only in society, but in a matter of love as well. So I'm going to let you just briefly, we have now a new station that's joined us. We've lost all of the people who heard the first 5 minutes, but they'll be back in a couple of minutes. But why don't you just repeat what you said about how it was that you, a retired world traveler and writer and adventurer who's worked for National Geographic and worked for many other organizations as you traveled throughout the world, would be writing a book on love.
Well, I followed the lead of one of the social philosophers I wrote about in Staring into Chaos. He was a Harvard sociologist named Peterim Sorokin, a Russian-American, and he studied the fate of Western civilization as compared to all previous civilizations in the Western world, and found that he felt that our civilization is going the way of the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans, that were deteriorating and making room, hopefully, for a new culture. And after he discovered that, he spent 10 years working on this study and produced a wonderful book, three-volume book called Social and Cultural Dynamics. And then he went on to found a foundation for the study of love at Harvard University, because he saw that love is the only answer to the problems of the world. Now, I don't mean romance. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the kind of consideration, the kind of careful attention to other people's welfare that creates good relationships. And that's what we're lacking in the modern world. We're lacking good relationships. We go to a place, I was over in Bosnia, for example, and there was a man there who was going from village to village, killing people right and left, and he was asked by a former neighbor, how could you do this when you were taught to love your neighbors? And he said, I do love them. I love killing them. And I mean, this is the kind of degradation, emotional degradation carried to extremes that's occurring in the Western world, where there's a lot of enmity, a lot of dog-eat-dog in the business world.
Yeah, hold that thought for just a moment, please. Yeah. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon is Bruce Brander, and we're talking about his book, A Love That Works, and looking philosophically into how do you change the relationships between people, how do you make a society work, and of course you have to start at the very basis, and that is the family. The family is the basis of all relationships. Upon the family, you build the community. Upon the community, you build the state. Upon the state, of course, you build international relations, but of course you have to start with the family. You have to really start with the individual, one individual at a time. And so Bruce has actually taken the story of love, and he talks about what the ancients knew about love. The Greek actually had a number of different words for love, but they all had a different meaning. Would you like to develop that idea a little bit for us?
Yes, yeah, surely, Dr. Stan. In searching for the meaning of love, I found that we just have no comprehension of what it means. It means a different thing for every person. And when somebody says, I love you, it's about as clear as the message in an alphabet soup. And it just doesn't carry much meaning at all. So I've cast about I spent 2 years in a university in Europe studying in their library, just independent study. Took a sabbatical for my journalistic work. And I looked into the theology of love, the philosophy of it, the psychology of it, and I found great clarity in the ancient Greek thinkers. They were the master psychologists of all time, and they had multiple words for love. We use the word love for so many, many different things that it just loses its meaning altogether. But they had multiple words, and they had three major words for love, and one was eros, from which we falsely take our idea of the erotic. They didn't mean sex at all. They meant the desire to reach out for something beyond ourselves and draw it into our lives to make us more complete. And we can Eros love chocolate in a trivial way because that fulfills us momentarily. We can Eros love a car. We can Eros love spiritual people. Can Eros love God. In fact, the Bible in the 81st Psalm says we should. Open your mouths wide and I will fill you, says the 81st Psalm. And we can find fulfillment in God, this kind of reaching out for fulfillment. Or we can do it, reach out for a person and try to draw that person into our life to make our lives more complete. And this is a very legitimate form of love. We have really degraded it to a great extent in our culture by making it too selfish. But nonetheless, it's a very legitimate form of love. And then they had one called philia, from the word philo or dear, and we make words out of it, Philadelphia, you know, the city of brotherly love, and philanthropist, somebody who loves humanity. And philia was a we-centered love. As Eros is a me-centered love, I want, I need, philia is we-centered, where the other person has importance in his or her own right, and not just in reference to me. And where we seek to serve the welfare of that person quite as thoroughly as we seek to serve our own welfare. And then there is a third kind of love, which biblical scholars will be familiar with, agape, or agape is sometimes pronounced, which is the pure form generous love that wants nothing in return, that seeks absolutely no return whatsoever. It's this pure giving, the sort of giving that a healthy, emotionally healthy mother gives to her baby, which does not depend upon feeling at all. She'll get up and change that baby's diapers and feed the baby in the middle of the night, whether she feels like it or not. It's a pure form giving love, and Christians know it, and so do other religious people, as God's love for his creation, this pure giving, with no return expected. And that these are the three sorts of love that the Greeks emphasized, and understanding that, we can aim higher than we aim right now, because we stay on this low level of Eros love, which is the I want, I need, and unmodified by the others, unless if it's not generous enough, if we don't add generosity, if we don't rise above romance, we tend to stunt our love to operate as emotional dwarfs, as it were, and have a very ineffective love that just doesn't work.
And, of course, I think one of the things you brought out, and I thought it was really so interesting, is that our current idea of love and romance, you know, begins with a boy meets girl and boy falls in love with girl. But really, in many societies in long past, certainly boy didn't meet girl until they were going to get married. And so many marriages in many societies are arranged by the families. And yet those marriages can result in perhaps many times a much more profound love than we see in our societies today, where half of our marriages end in divorce, and then we have so many people just living together, not even bothering to get married. And yet, of course, in other more stable societies, you got married, for life, and the love was something that developed after you got married. Would you like to sort of expand on that? Because I thought this was one of the most profound thoughts, something we never think about today.
Yes, it does develop where it does, and it usually does, because the people are put together. First of all, they haven't been passed around from partner to partner, and they don't get jaded and injured emotionally. And, you know, romance is a very wounding thing. Broken hearts are a devastating experience, and they do have a lifelong effect. Especially sexual bonding, premarital or otherwise, is a lifelong thing. We can't just erase it, forget about it like the case of the flu. It stays with us. There was a woman, middle-aged woman I encountered years ago, who said our past loves are engraved upon our souls, and they are. So the people who have arranged marriages ordinarily go into the marriages without having been elsewhere with other men or women, and they are expected to treat each other with kindness, with consideration. And this builds love. If we're kind to people, if we're considerate, if we're honest and straightforward, then we begin not only to feel better about them because of our generosity toward them. Generosity, incidentally, does make you feel better about people, but it makes them feel better about us, too. And they build love. They build love by active acts of love, instead of just passively feeling, which we do, and has no appreciable effect upon the other person. If how I feel really doesn't affect other people, how I act does. And they rely upon that, upon generosity of action, and they grow in love, they build love, and of course, people in our culture who do the same thing, who live generously toward each other and fairly and honestly, they build love too, and they stay together. And it's the ones who just sit back and try to feel and feel and feel, they don't get anywhere at all, because the feelings of love, sociologists tell us, evaporate within 18 months to 3 years.
And this idea of you fall in love and then you fall out of love, but that's not the way that it really has to be. It can't be that way because, but of course, families break up while society begins to crumble from within, and that is one of the major problems in America today, is we base everything on romance, and yet, of course, romantic level, why don't you go back? You make a point in your book where this idea of romantic love comes from.
Well, it's a natural outgrowth of a selfish society, essentially. When romance goes bad as it does in our culture, it's a natural outgrowth of too much selfishness, too little generosity. I want, I need, therefore I love, and it doesn't go anywhere, of course. And our type of romance occurred in the late days of ancient Rome. And it was actually, romance means love in the Roman manner. And they had a kind of love like we do, where it was more of a sport. They played around with love. They made adultery a sport. They degraded marriage. They had a high divorce rate, a growing divorce rate. Divorce was easy to get in the late days of Rome. And this was among the wealthier people, of course, who could afford that sort of thing. And there was a lot of promiscuity, and the marriage itself began to degenerate to the point where people just didn't get married. Many people just didn't get married. That's happening in our culture too, by the way. Many people, more Americans today, are staying single than ever before in a percentage way. And so this kind of love was named romance, which meant love in the Roman manner.
I thought what was such an interesting thing, you pointed out that at the time of Augustus, and of course people remember the Christmas story, at the time of Augustus an order was given out that everyone was to go to the place of their birth, to be counted, and the census was to be taken. But, at the time of Augustus, wasn't there a real shortage of children? Weren't the people just having so many abortions or not having children? They were really having population with a shrinking, problems with a shrinking population?
It was a very serious thing in that time. Spain, for example, once the most populated part of the Roman Empire, became virtually depopulated by the 200s and 300s A.D. And yes, they had a serious population problem, not growing population, but diminishing population. We're developing that here in the Western world, too, by the way. And Augustus Caesar passed laws trying to promote marriage, trying to promote the family, just as President Bush is doing. And they didn't work, because the people were on a downward course. They were on a course of much too selfish living. And of course, then along came the various religions, Christianity and other religions too, that were positive religions. Christianity won out in the end, but there were some very strong religious groups at that time that were seeking reform and better lives, more humane lives. And these people flourished, but the people who stuck with the Roman way, down they went. And their love went down to the point where they were terribly lonesome, terribly frustrated, and life was virtually meaningless for them, which and of course it is for many people today.
And they had to go out and recruit soldiers from other countries, and you'd be interested in knowing that they actually are going into other countries and recruiting soldiers to go over to Iraq to act as guards or anybody. All throughout the world they're trying to recruit people to go off to fight our wars for us, and of course it's like deja vu all over again. But, of course, a lot of this gets back to the basic concepts of the family and individual love. And you destroy the foundation of society, which is the family, why you destroy the society. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Bruce Brander, his book, Love That Works. We'd love your calls. If you'd like to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Right here at Radio Liberty. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Bruce Brander. His book is Love That Works. And, of course, it's basically a philosophical book. It's based upon the history of love in various societies. And then, of course, how do you make your own marriage work? How do you have a marriage that can last and through all the good times and the bad times? Because once romance is gone, why, of course, there has to be something there, or the marriage is going to end. There has to, I believe, and my personal belief is there has to be a spiritual side to any certainly a permanent marriage relationship. So why don't you pick up the story from there, Bruce?
Yes, well, indeed. First of all, I'll mention that the purpose of Love That Works, the book, is to help people avoid the enormous damage that romance is causing. Not that romance itself is necessarily faulty, it's just incomplete, it's not enough. And the book seeks to find more successful ways of loving And the more successful ways have to do, the message is very simple, really. The more successful ways have to do with just a kinder, more generous action, more attention on the welfare, the highest welfare of the other person, rather than my wants and my needs. I listen to the radio quite a lot. I do calisthenics in the morning and click on the radio and listen to various radio psychologists. And I was hearing a man calling in saying, my wife doesn't meet my needs. And that really isn't what she's for. That's what a mama is for a baby. But if he's a married man, he should be seeking to meet her needs and not trying to draw upon her continually. And what goes wrong with modern love, modern romance, is that the people continue drawing on each other. They think that love is out there somewhere, and they've got to find a supplier. And so they look for a person to supply them with love, like a baby would look for a mama, you know. And they draw this person into their lives, and they expect to be able to just draw and feed and suckle on this person. And you get two people doing that, two adult people doing that to each other, and they drain each other in time, and they have to break apart simply to recuperate. They wound each other, they harm each other. Whereas if we simply reverse that, turn it around, and if I seek my wife's needs, and she seeks my needs, hopefully, even if she doesn't, I should continue to seek her needs, but in the case of my marriage, she does. And we aid each other, we help each other, we build each other up, and this does keep a marriage together. We've had a marriage for 20 years now, and it's very successful. We have four kids who have no drug problems, nothing like that. It's just out of the question. They're polite, good, decent Christian kids, and they chose Christianity. Although we go to church, they chose it for themselves, and they're just very well balanced, very healthy kids emotionally as well as physically. And I think that this derives from a very simple atmosphere of people seeking each other's welfare instead of being exclusively preoccupied with their own.
And, of course, that's the agape love that you speak of, the love, of course, that God should have for us and that we should have for one another.
Yeah, sure. Or even that middle stage love. There's that middle stage love that the Greeks called philia, where you do expect to return. I think that's, I look at the level that people are on emotionally. You grow emotionally as you do this. And I think I'm pretty much on the middle level. I don't think I'm not in the class with Mother Teresa and Gandhi and people like that at all. I'd love to be there, and I hope to be maybe someday if I live long enough. But I've grown enough that I can give and serve, and I do dearly hope that I'll be given and served in return, but I don't demand it, you see. And that would put me in the middle level, and still growing. I aim high, and I think that's the task of all of us, no matter what level we're on. If we're on this romantic, I want, I need, baby love level, it really is an infantile form of love. If we're on that level, then we should aim high, and it's a noble thing to do. Do our best for the other person, and we will grow. We'll grow emotionally, just as we grow physically by muscle building and intellectually by studying. We need to do that with our emotions, too, to grow emotionally from babyhood to a higher level.
And I agree with you totally, and I think that you've done a good analysis of this in your book, Love That Works. And incidentally, for our listeners out there, Radio Liberty is carrying this book, and our book supply should be in any day now. They were actually mailed on the 3rd to us, so they'll be along. If you already ordered one, fine, it'll be coming. And if you haven't, why, give us a call, and we'll be glad to get one for you. But we think it's a book that every young person should read as they get involved in romance. And they think, of course, this is going to last forever, and they're laying themselves open many times for just terrible, terrible heartbreak. Love is something that has to be approached from a mature point of view. It's very hard when you're young to do it, but if you don't, of course, it will, of course, affect you for the rest of your life. So we'll be back here in just a moment with Bruce Brander. We will welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295.
Have you ever wondered
about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea. Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I want to mention we do carry both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light Water Fillers, and we think they're great products. We think it's a great thing to have on hand to make sure that your water is clean and pure and no bacteria, and takes the herbicides and pesticides out of it. If you're in an area with lead or arsenic or MTBE or fluoride, why, there's special fillers that you can get to take those products out. But, of course, you need to have water that you can really depend on. And then what would happen if there were an emergency, you know, and we did not have had something happen here in America? We keep being told there's going to be a terrorist attack, and well, if there really were one and there was a disruption in the ability to get water and things, how would you be sure that the water you could get from a stream or a creek would be good? Get a Berkey water filter. You can see them up on our website at radioliberty.com and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 for the Berkey or Berkey Light. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Bruce Brander. We're talking about his book, Love That Works. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question or comment about this, and of course, the subtitle is The Art and Science of Giving. So, now Bruce, why don't you talk a little bit about the response you're getting as you actually, of course, go across the country on various talk radio programs talking about your book. What sort of response are you getting from people? Do people really think that we need anything on love, or do you think most people feel that they know everything that they need to know?
Well, they don't feel they know everything they need to know, Dr. Stan, because there's so much confusion about love, there's so much difficulty and pain and broken hearts, and the divorce rate is soaring. So people are really looking for something better, and a lot of books about love today seek to patch up romance. They seek to try to tickle up the feelings of early romance and keep things together that way, and of course that doesn't work. The candlelight dinners and the flowers are nice, and you know, I bring my wife flowers regularly even after 20 years of marriage, and she cooks a batch of special cookies for me and things like that, and we certainly appreciate that. But that is not what keeps the marriage together. What keeps the marriage together really is kindness, consideration, looking out for the welfare of one another. And this will keep any relationship, any friendship, any parent-child relationship, any teacher-student relationship, it'll make it thrive. And the reaction I'm getting from the book so far, it's only been out for less than 2 months now, is really very strong. I've had virtually no negative comments. The only negative comment came from a feminist who felt I didn't have enough feminism in it, and that's true. That's not my field. We exchanged messages back and forth, and we became quite friendly, actually, after a time. But I sent this book out before I sent it to a publisher. I sent it to a lot of major scholars in what they call close relationship studies. Theologians and sociologists and psychologists and major universities like Harvard and University of Chicago and Northwestern, and I wanted their comments because I wasn't fully sure of the book. I'm a journalist and not a theologian or a psychologist, even though I studied a whole lot of all their subjects. I've taken long sabbaticals, as long as 4 years, just for study, and independent scholar, and. Anyway, I sent this manuscript out to many, many scholars all over the country, and I got really positive responses from it, and many said, I'm going to use this book in my classes. So far I'm getting good response, and the interviewers, I had an interviewer in Seattle, Washington, who said, I'm going to give this book to my girlfriend. and several have said they give it to their kids.
Well, I think it really would be a wonderful thing for children, young people, just getting started in romantic love, to realize, of course, that this is a dead end in itself. Now, of course, you and your book go back and talk about Aristotle and the ancient philosophers, because they wrote about this as well, didn't they?
Well, they certainly did. They wrote a lot about it. In fact, Plato referred to romantic love, as we think of it, as he called it the son of poverty, because it essentially derives from an emotional need, an emotional want, an emotional incompleteness, and we're trying to reach out and get somebody to love us. And we're not taking into consideration that we have to love back, that we have to be kind and generous and gentle and take care of the other person in a very humane sort of a way. And this is what makes love thrive. And the first half of the book, I come down pretty hard on romance as it is today, because it's just not working for us anymore, and there's no serious endeavor in our society that fails so often and so dismally as romance. And we see the failure everywhere, in our lives, in our hearts, our divorce courts, and most of us personally have suffered sorrow and disappointment and disillusion in our own romances, but we don't talk about it much, and it's one of the best kept secrets in our society.
And, of course, you remarked that the German philosopher Nietzsche warned that it's not the lack of love but the lack of friendship that makes unhappy marriages. I thought that was a very, 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 very profound statement.
Well, it was. And coming from Nietzsche, who I don't particularly like, he's a pretty negative man in many regards, but he's absolutely right in that the lack of friendship, but not just buddy-type, drinking buddy-type friendship, but this deep, devoted, dedicated friendship that we don't see a whole lot of in our culture. You hear so much disappointment. I was listening to a radio preacher named Joyce Meyer yesterday, and she apparently had a rough early life, and she was abused by her father, and she married wrongly, and she said, I wrote the quote down, she said, I didn't trust the words I love you. To me, they just meant pain. And that's the case of so many people. Their romances are just a roller coaster ride to nowhere, with highs and deep lows. And sociologists have found, they've done several surveys on campuses across the nation, and find that 50% of the people coming out of romances suffer quite severe depression, and 25% have suicidal thoughts. And I don't know about you, but I've known at least three young women who actually did attempt suicide as a result of failed romance, and I don't doubt that most of us know somebody who suffered that severely. And this is something we it can't continue. and then when romance brings us into marriage, as you pointed out, our chances of success are statistically the same as the flip of a coin, 50-50. And I like to say that if we faced those same odds for an airplane trip, we wouldn't go. And of course, that's the case of many of the young people. They're afraid to get involved in relationships. They're afraid. They have what one psychologist called amorophobia. They're afraid of amor, afraid of love. And so they dance around the edges of it, and they shack up and have one-night stands and what have you. And in the process, they sour themselves for future good relationships, but they're scared of getting into marriage. They're scared to death.
I love this one quotation from Elaine William Walster, who said, you know, passionate love is a fragile flower. It wilts in time. Compassionate love is a sturdy evergreen that thrives with contact. Although passionate love loses its fight against time, compassionate love does not. And I thought that was really such a profound statement. And people have to understand that everything changes with the passage of time. But of course, love can either end or it can grow and increase in intensity.
Well, yes, and when they say we have to work at our marriages, they don't really make it clear what we have to work at. But what we have to work at is this kindness, this consideration, this seeking the highest welfare of the other person. And then we rise. Not only do we have better relationships with our kids, with our students, with everybody, but we grow emotionally out of the sickness of the sick society, and we become healthy, strong, independent, content people as a consequence of loving properly. As the Bible says, and the other religions say this too, but Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you, and not as the world loves. And this is really what we are aiming for, whether Christian or otherwise, this kind of generous love that is not as the world is presently loving.
Well, after living a life of adventure and travel, was it hard to come back and settle down to raise your children?
No, not a bit, Dr. Stan. It's delightful. I enjoyed travel. I have a boy's taste for adventure still, and I applied it to good things, fortunately. But it was just delightful to settle down. I married rather late in life. I didn't expect to because I traveled so much. But I settled for a while, worked at a university, and met a woman in church, actually, a young woman, quite a lot younger than I, and we got along extremely well, and we had a very chaste, decent courtship, very considerate and kind, and it led to a good marriage. And it's just been a delight. And nowadays, I do travel once in a while. I go off to mostly crisis zones of the world, and less now because I have three kids in their teens and one almost teenage. And I don't like traveling anymore. I've traveled for so long. And once I get on the road, it's okay. But I much prefer to stay home, which is why I've been studying and writing books instead of going off and charging around the world.
Well, of course, one of the stories you tell in your book is about the children and the Romanian orphans. Would you like to tell that story? Because I think it is so really so apropos, and of course the necessity for love.
Well, yes, and love is necessary. There's a song, I think a Beatles song, "We All Need Love," and it's absolutely true. It's a deep need, but I'm not speaking of romance. We don't need more of that. We can do without that pretty well. That comes on, it's like a fever. It's not something we do, it's something that does us, as it were. And so be it, if it's wired into us, so we have to accept that. But if we keep our romances generous and kind and everything, then they'll work out just fine. But there is a need for this altruistic love, this compassionate love, this giving, serving, helping love that is built right into us. And the kids in Romania, I was over in Romania in the 1990s when a dictator, Ceausescu, fell from power, and he was executed by his own people. And they discovered in that country horrendous orphanages. Ceausescu wanted a model state, so he put anybody who was defective or in an orphanage, or anybody who, kids who were mildly retarded, or kids who had a bad leg, or even unwanted children, gypsy children, were put into these orphanages, and they were horrible places. You probably remember seeing news clips on the media about them. The media was just shocked. And they were great big dormitories full of steel-barred white cribs, and the children were put in these cribs. They were not allowed out. They lived their whole lives in these steel-barred cribs. They were given food, enough food to stay alive, given a blanket to stay, survive. They weren't born necessarily, but they survived. But they were given no attention at all, no emotional attention. They weren't picked up, they weren't rocked, they weren't sung to, they weren't told stories, they weren't played with. They were just ignored by too few untrained workers who would run around changing their diapers on schedule, not on need, and tossed in a bottle for them to feed on, and that was the end of the attention they received. Now, there were children there, and this is extremely impressive, there were children there 3 and 4 years old who had not grown from babyhood. They were still the size of babies. They couldn't walk, they couldn't sit up, they couldn't talk. They were suffering a disease that's, there's a Greek word for it, marasmus. It means failure to thrive. And it comes from lack of emotional attention. Not lack of feeding, not lack of physical attention, not lack of anything else, but emotional attention, lack of this altruistic love. These kids weren't growing, and many, many were dying. The death rate was very high. And then later on, I found older kids in I went to Rwanda during the genocide there, and we were rescuing, I worked for World Vision Relief Agency then, and we were rescuing kids who had been lost, separated from their parents, or orphaned, because 800,000 people were slaughtered there, shot or killed with machetes, and there were lots of children running around without parents. And we found one little fellow in a pile of corpses. He was about 5-6 years old, and he couldn't talk at first. He was so traumatized. And later on, when he could talk, we said, "Well, what's your name?" And he told us, "I am nobody's nothing." He was so bereft of attention, so bereft of love, he felt so isolated from humane contact that he just felt he was nothing. He had no identity at all. And children need this kind of attention, this kind of love, this kind of kindness, altruistic love to grow properly, not only physically, but also emotionally and just throughout. And even older people do need love in a altruistic way, and they need to give it too. You mentioned on one of our previous chats that old people are better off if they have pets, and that's actually proven. There's a doctor named Dean Ornish. He's a heart specialist, and he's one of the most esteemed doctors in this country at the present time. And one of his books is Love and Survival, and he cites study after study after study that indicates people who are cut off from human contact, that don't have families, that don't have community, have a much higher rate of sickness and a much higher death rate than people who do have some sort of a community. And as you mentioned, people, even if they have pets, that's quite sufficient because they can give and serve and help their pets. Cats are particularly popular among women for that reason, because they need a lot of attention. And this is giving love, serving love, and it keeps us going, it keeps us strong, it keeps us happy and content. And of course, if we have this within our families, as Confucius said, if there's love in the family, there's peace in the kingdom, because it spreads outward, too.
And of course, this is really the very, very basis of society, and where we get into trouble today is we've lost any concept of what love is really about, and you're certainly not going to get this in our schools today. I mean, what they're teaching in our schools is all about sex and about, but it's not about those lasting relationships that will survive through the years. As the passion of love begins to wilt, of course, what is going to pick up in its place? Are you going to fall out of love and go looking for it elsewhere? Are you going to say we're committed, we're married before God for life until death us do part? And I think that's really the thing that in many respects will draw people and keep them together is this realization that they have this commitment before God. And if they're having a problem with their relationship, the problem isn't necessarily even with their mate. It's their relationship to God and to themselves. Well, Bruce, I really appreciate so much your willingness to come on and discuss your book with us. And we've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before we have to let you go. What is the parting thought that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, if they want successful love relationships, and who doesn't? We all do. Aim high. Aim be as generous, as kind, as honest, and decent as possible. And it's obvious. It's such a clear message that this will develop into a better human relationship with anybody we deal with, whether in the supermarket line or in our marriage or with our children or with our students or what all. Just aim high and be as generous as possible, and not only will we have better relationships with other people, but better relationships with ourselves, because we'll grow emotionally into a health that is not a common thing in our society. We're very sickly people in a sick society, emotionally ailing. And if we do this, if we're generous, honest, decent, kind, we grow out of this sickness and become healthy, strong people with great relationships. And that really is the goal.
Amen to that. Well, thank you so very much. Our guest has been Bruce Brander, and his book is Love That Works. And if you're interested in getting it, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Bruce, do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out before we let you go?
Well, you know, I don't have a website. My son is going to build one for me, but I don't have it yet. Templeton Foundation Press is selling the books at a discount because there's no middle person.
Okay, well, actually, we are going to sell it right here through Radio Liberty.
And so. Yes, indeed. Sure you are. Well, that's great. And Barnes & Noble has it, and Bowman's and all the others seem to have it, too.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my great pleasure.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that was Bruce Brander, and certainly one of my favorite people. I've talked to Bruce. This is the third program we've done with him on this book. We think it's an important book. We think it would be an excellent gift for your children, for your grandchildren. It's called Love That Works. 1-800-544-8927.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Arthur Stan. Actually, we've got a three-video set. It's called Amazing Clips, and you'll actually hear the confrontation at the Rand-Contra hearings when Congressman Jack Brooks is trying to bring out the fact that there is a plan to suspend the Constitution in case of a national emergency, and you'll hear, of course, Senator Inouye interrupting again and again. Why? Because they don't want the American people to be disturbed. They don't want them to know there really is a plan to arrest Americans and put them in concentration camps. And, of course, time and again, why Senator Inouye is interrupting to keep this from being brought out in public. And then you will hear, of course, Congressman Gonzalez, Henry Gonzalez, longtime chairman of the House Banking Committee, saying, well, the only person who got close to the truth was Congressman Jack Brooks, because there really is a plan in case of a national emergency to arrest Americans and put them into concentration camps. Now, you have to understand that all they have to do is create an incident. It doesn't have to be a terrorist attack. There really are people who have always dreamed of establishing a dictatorship in America. This has been planned for a long period of time, going back, of course, to the time when the Rosicrucians sent a small contingent here to the United States back in 1640. That's covered in our October newsletter. We'll be glad to get that for you. And if you want to verify it from their writings, of course, the book would be The Secret Destiny of America, written by Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist. That's The Secret Destiny of America. That is available through Radio Liberty, as are so many other things. But the amazing clips, if you haven't seen them, you need to get them. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Over 3.5 hours, you'll see the camps, you'll see the footage, and you'll understand what it's really about. Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, and then our weekend program that's heard on 35, 36 stations. We're gradually, of course, expanding our coverage, trying to get people to think about what's going on, trying to get them to ask, why are we in Iraq? I mean, this had nothing to do with the terrorist attack on 9-1-1. Saddam Hussein, contrary to everything you've heard, wasn't involved in that. The FBI and the CIA agreed with that, and even the Bush administration will agree with that. Why did we go to war in Iraq? Well, it was planned a long time ago. We need an excuse, like we need an excuse to go into Vietnam. So they created the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and there wasn't any. They needed an excuse to get us into the Second World War, and so we left our troops at Pearl Harbor, and of course we did everything we could to infuriate the Japanese, including putting a total oil embargo on Japan, so she couldn't buy oil anywhere in the world. What would happen if they embargoed America today with oil? We'd have to go to war. We would have no alternative, and that is the alternative the Japanese had. But even worse than that, we knew where the fleet was. We knew when the attack was coming, and we left 2,800 American boys at Pearl Harbor to die. You need to get our 4 tapes out on Pearl Harbor. You need to get the book, 2 books, actually, Day of Deceit by Robert Stinnett. That's Day of Deceit, and of course, Infamy by David Wade, both available through Radio Liberty. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story, which has the documentation on Vietnam. You'll want to, of course, get the material, syllabus that goes with it, all the documentation that you need to begin to talk to others and make them understand that all of the wars of the last century were contrived. Yes, even the war against Adolf Hitler, because after the war we brought the Nazis to America under Operation Paperclip, and the CIA helped 10,000 Nazis escape to South America through the Rat Line, and of course that's covered in the 4 tapes that we have. Operation Paperclip, that's Operation Paperclip. It's also covered in Robert's book, which we carry, called The Medusa File. There's so much information out there, you are never going to get through regular channels. Let me suggest our 4 tape set, Operation Paperclip, which covers both the bringing of the Nazi scientists to America, the wicked Nazi scientists, and helping 10,000 of them, Klaus Barbie, certainly Eichmann, Mengele, Martin Bormann, help them escape to South America. Why would we do that? Because behind the Nazi movement was a dark occult force, and those same dark occult forces have been working within the highest echelons of our government for the last 200 years, since its very inception. Because, of course, there's always been the Christian influence, and then there's been the dark side, the occult influence. And did you understand the two parallel forces and the clash that has occurred between them? You can't understand what's going on today, or why it doesn't really seem to matter whether we elect the Republicans or the Democrats, because both political parties are dedicated to financing our enemies, to shipping our industries and our jobs overseas, to destroying the value of our currency, to doing away with our national sovereignty, to create a new world order and a new world religion. And this is really what it's all about. There are dark spiritual forces behind everything moving us towards a world government and the destruction of freedom as we've known it. And until people can begin to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield, you can't understand anything. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need it. You need the other items we've talked about, but give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like a free copy of our October newsletter, which goes into the secret society that came to America in 1640. And then if you want to verify it, I get The Secret Destiny of America, written by Manly P. Holm, who is a Satanist. And then go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.